Today is Thursday, August 1st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up, the son of Osama bin Laden may have been killed. We hear how his death could affect al-Qaeda. It's all on today's International Edition. Former U.S. Vice President Joe Biden was the center stage for yesterday's Democratic presidential debate and often found himself under attack by several of his nine rivals on stage. But Biden was quick to counterattack in what was a freewheeling debate and also made an impassioned case that he is the Democrat best positioned to defeat President Donald Trump next year. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has more on the second night of the second round of Democratic debates.
It was a much feistier night of debate in Detroit, with the current frontrunner, Joe Biden, facing multiple attacks from his rivals on health care, immigration, climate change, and criminal justice. But Biden also pushed back against his critics, including California Senator Kamala Harris, over their competing health care plans.
And to be very blunt and to be very straightforward, you can't beat President Trump with double talk on this plan.
So I think that you should really think about what you're saying, but be reflective and understand that the people of America want access to health care and do not want costs to be their barrier to getting it.
Biden also clashed over immigration with former Obama cabinet secretary Julian Castro. Castro wants to decriminalize migrant border crossings.
If you cross the border illegally, you should be able to be sent back. It's a crime.
First of all, Mr. Vice President, it looks like one of us has learned the lessons of the past and one of us hasn't.
New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand challenged Biden about some long-ago comments he made about women in the workplace.
Most women have to work to provide for their kids. Many women want to be working to provide for their communities
you,
and to
Senator,
help people.
Let
so
the Vice President
either you don't
no,
believe
you.
It today or... What did you mean when you said it then?
I was deeply involved in making sure there were the equal pay amendments. I was deeply involved in all these things. I came up with the It's On Us proposal to see to it that women were treated more decently on college campuses. You came to Syracuse University with me and said it was wonderful. I'm passionate about the concern making sure women are treated equally. I don't know what's happened except that you're now running for president.
But when they were not attacking each other, the Democrats were eager to turn their fire on President Trump, including Colorado Senator Michael Bennett.
We've been consumed by a president who frankly doesn't give a damn about your kids or mine. Mr. President, kids belong in classrooms, not cages.
Biden also went after Trump on some of his recent controversial comments on race and diversity.
So, Mr. President, let's get something straight. We love it. We are not leaving it. We are here to stay, and we're certainly not going to leave it to you.
Democrats debate next in September, and there could be fewer contenders on stage because of tighter qualifying rules. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
A plan that does not cover everyone.
Well, the son and heir of al-Qaeda founder Osama bin Laden is presumed dead, apparently killed in a U.S.-supported operation, according to reports. Officials speaking on the condition of anonymity confirmed the suspected death of Hamza bin Laden, believed to be in his 30s, yesterday, as first reported by NBC News. VOA correspondent Jeff Selden is covering the story and spoke with my colleague, Kate Pound Dawson, a short time ago about the impact the younger bin Laden's death might have on al-Qaeda.
Hamza bin Laden was mostly a figurehead, a voice for al-Qaeda, who was used specifically to reach out to the younger generation of jihadists and appeal to them, and almost to counter some of the appeal that Islamic State, that's our group, it's the al-Qaeda's main rival, had generated by going on social media and reaching out to younger jihadists. So al-Qaeda was really looking at Hamza bin Laden as someone who could fill that role of appealing to the younger generation of jihadists. He was introduced in 2015 in an audio tape by al-Qaeda leader Ayman al-Zawahiri. And since then, he's produced a number of videos, audio tapes, messages where he's railed against the United States, called for attacks to revenge the death of his father, to avenge his father's death. He's also picked up in some of these tapes on a theme that was a favorite of Osama bin Laden, his father, of railing against and criticizing the monarchy in Saudi Arabia, calling them traitors to Islam.
Now, what is known about his reported death?
The information that we've been hearing is that some analysis has been coming across suggesting that perhaps recently has been coming across suggesting perhaps that he had been killed. The officials who first talked to NBC and then a New York Times report later confirmed that they suspect he's dead. The New York Times reporting that the death could have occurred anywhere in the past 2 years. And officially, we haven't gotten any word from the White House or from the Pentagon or any of the intelligence agencies to say on the record what has happened to Hamza bin Laden. It's interesting, though, that not a lot of known is not a lot of is being said, because one of the things that Hamza bin Laden did, according to many analysts who studied him, who studied his family, is that he didn't want to get any special treatment just because he was the son of Al-Qaeda founder Osama bin Laden. Hamza wanted to go through the regular training. He wanted to get that on-the-ground experience. So it leaves open the possibility that if he was killed, and again, officially the U.S. has not come out on the record and said that has happened, but if he was, it's very possible he was killed in an operation that was targeting Al-Qaeda foot soldiers or other officials in which he was involved getting that type of on-the-ground experience. The thought by many analysts who have studied Al-Qaeda is that while he was being groomed as the heir apparent to one day run the organization, right now he was pretty low down on the totem pole in terms of people who were likely to be tapped as the next leader.
You indicated his death may not have a major impact on Al-Qaeda's development and operations in the coming years. What do analysts suspect will be the effect?
Well, they think for now, and look, there was just a UN report that came out this past week, which said that over the long term, when you look at the two preeminent terrorist jihadist groups on the globe right now, you have Islamic State and then you have Al-Qaeda. Islamic State is viewed by UN member states, their intelligence agencies, as the near-term threat. But over the long term, they say that Al-Qaeda is set up very strongly. Its affiliates are well-placed, well-resourced. They have good plans in place. The one question that remains about Al-Qaeda, though, is its plan of succession. Its current leader, Ayman al-Zawahiri, who took over for Osama bin Laden, is thought to be ill, and there are questions about how much more he can do, how strong he is to continue leading the organization, and there are questions about what the plans for succession are, who's going to replace him. There aren't many people who think that Hamza bin Laden was going to be directly behind Zawahiri, but he was somebody that was known. He was a known quantity and something that they felt lots of members of the organization could look up to and relate to, and because he carried that prestige. Here, he was the heir to Osama bin Laden. So there is going to be a hit. Islamic State has done very, very well with younger would-be jihadists, younger would-be foreign fighters. Al-Qaeda, not so much, but...
That was correspondent Jeff Selden speaking with VOA's Kate Pound Dawson. You're listening to International Edition. This is Voice of America. Among the top stories in the world, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says he will not be able to meet with North Korean officials in Bangkok on the sidelines of an ASEAN summit. Farmers in India learn new ways to earn a living and prevent troops of monkeys from ravaging their crops. Mozambique's president and the leader of the main opposition group have signed a peace agreement. South Koreans are shunning Japanese beer, cars, and other products as the dispute between Seoul and Tokyo grows. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is VOA's International Edition.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports, Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
This is Science in a Minute.
Earlier this year, NASA's Transiting Exoplanet Survey satellite discovered a planet passing in front of a star located only 31 light years from Earth. To confirm the discovery, scientists studied additional data gathered by several ground-based observatories. The information also indicated the existence of two additional planets in the planetary system. The scientists say two of the planets orbit so close to their star that they are likely uninhabitable. But the third planet was found on the outer edge of the so-called habitable zone, where conditions could be ideal for life to form as on Earth. If the planet has an atmosphere, the scientists say it could trap enough heat to warm the planet and allow for liquid water on its surface. But if no atmosphere is found, the planet would probably be too cold to be habitable. I'm VOA. Rick Pantaleo.
This is VOA's International Edition. White House Senior Advisor Jared Kushner is leading a U.S. delegation touring the Middle East to finalize details of his proposed $50 billion economic development plan for the Palestinians, Jordan, Egypt, and Lebanon. Top U.S. diplomats are along on the tour, which includes stops in Israel, Saudi Arabia, and the United Arab Emirates. The delegation met with Jordan's King Abdullah II, who reaffirmed his position that the establishment of a Palestinian state alongside Israel is the only way to resolve the long simmering crisis. Dale Gavilek reports from Amman.
Jared Kushner and the U.S. diplomats held talks Wednesday with Jordan's King Abdullah II about ways to revive the Mideast peace process. The king reiterated the need to achieve a just and lasting peace in order to ensure the establishment of an independent Palestinian state along the lines of June 4, 1967, with East Jerusalem as its capital, living in peace and security alongside Israel. Abdullah also reaffirmed the Arab Peace Initiative, which offers Arab recognition of Israel's right to exist in exchange for land, as well as relevant United Nations resolutions to achieve peace between Israel and the Palestinians. Jordanian political and analyst Osama El-Sharif says that while Jordan's position is clear, it isn't yet known what Kushner is offering on the political front.
We only know the Jordanian position, don't know what Kushner has proposed or talked about with the king. So Jordan's position, as reiterated by the king, is very clear. It is the same position as most of the rest of the world, Russia, China, the EU, and of course Arab countries, at least in their latest Arab summit resolution. They reaffirmed the commitment to the Arab Peace Initiative as the benchmark, as well as UN resolutions. What we don't know, of course, is the political component of what Kushner has to offer. We know bits and pieces from the unilateral decisions that Trump had taken in the last 2 years with regard to Jerusalem, with regard to attempts to defund UNRWA, with regard to the right of Palestinian return to Palestine, all of this. In a way, these unilateral positions have preempted the political component because these are final status issues that have to be negotiated between the Palestinians and the Israelis. If these issues are no longer on the table, Jerusalem, independent Palestinian state, self-determination, return of refugees, then what is there to be discussed?
Arab observers have viewed the U.S. economic plan proposed by Kushner with suspicion, possibly signaling trouble for Jordan because it fails to address key issues, such as an independent Palestinian state, Israeli occupation, and the Palestinians' right to return to homes from which they fled or were expelled after Israel's creation in 1948. Jordan hosts millions of Palestinians who poured into the country in two waves, after Israel's creation and following the 1967 Six-Day War, when Israel occupied the West Bank, East Jerusalem, and Gaza. The largely desert country, which has few resources and relies heavily on international donors, including $1 billion a year from Washington, is home to 9.5 million people, more than half of them of Palestinian origin. King Abdullah II has also repeatedly ruled out confederation with the Palestinians or giving up custodianship of Jerusalem holy sites, calling them red lines. Al-Sharif says Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi will present Kushner with similar concerns when they meet in Cairo. King Abdullah visited al-Sisi recently to make sure both Arab leaders are in agreement.
The joint statement that was released after the king saw Sisi in Cairo 2 days ago, that Jordan and Egypt are on the same page with regard to the Palestinian issue. But at least for the time being, Egypt has sent a couple of messages saying that it does not want to be involved in the Trump peace plan at this stage, and it still reiterates the common Arab position that there has to be an independent Palestinian state in the West Bank and Gaza with East Jerusalem as its capital. Kushner will meet with Sisi, so we don't know what kind of message will come out, at least from the Egyptian side.
Jordan and Egypt are the only two Arab countries that have a signed peace treaty with Israel. In Amman, recent protests have been staged against what has been dubbed Kushner's deal of the century. Dale Gavlak for VOA News, Amman.
Yemen's Houthis are claiming responsibility for a ballistic missile strike that tore through a military parade at a Saudi coalition airbase near Aden today, killing dozens. A suicide bomber also blew himself up near a police compound in the city, killing over half a dozen people. Edward Uranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
Sirens went off and military vehicles surrounded the Al Jalah camp after a ballistic missile struck a military parade at the Saudi-led coalition airbase in the south of Yemen. Dozens of people were killed or wounded in the explosion, including cadets and top officers, according to Arab media. Yemen's Houthi militia group claimed responsibility for the attack. Pro-Houthi media said the group's military spokesman, Colonel Yahya Saria, claimed that his forces had fired the ballistic missile. Saria was quoted Wednesday by a pro-Houthi TV station as saying the group would avenge several Saudi attacks on Houthi-controlled territory.
وفي سياق متصل أكد المتحدث باسم القوات المسلحة اليمنية العميد يحيى سريع أن القوات
The TV quotes Saria as saying that Saudi coalition attacks on civilians in a market and other similar attacks would not go unavenged. Lebanese-based Al-Mayadeen TV, which is close to Iran, Hezbollah, and Syria, claim that the Houthis now have a sophisticated operations control center to attack Saudi-led coalition targets inside Yemen as well as on Saudi soil. VOA could not independently confirm the claim. A suicide bomber also blew himself up in front of a police station in Aden in a second attack, which may or may not have been related to the first. Saudi-owned Al Arabiya TV claimed that Saudi-led coalition forces received information that the Houthis were planning to target Aden with vehicles driven by suicide bombers earlier this week. The prime minister of Yemen's internationally recognized government, of President Abdrabu Mansour Hadi, claimed that the suicide bombing was an indication that the Houthis have ties to terrorist groups operating in Yemen. The Houthis have claimed responsibility for a number of drone strikes on Saudi territory in recent months, including at least three successful attacks on Abha Airport in the south of the country, and at least two drone strikes on oil pumping stations on the Yanbo pipeline. U.S. officials say the latter attack may have been launched from Iraq rather than Yemen. Hilal Kashan, who teaches political science at the American University of Beirut, told VOA that the Houthis use a combination of missiles and drones in their long-range attacks, and that their primary objective is to inflict as many casualties as possible. He added, the Houthis always have a reason to hit back at the Saudi coalition because of what he calls the indiscriminate nature of the Saudi-led coalition war effort. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
In news on the continent, a one-year-old girl has been diagnosed with Ebola today in the city of Goma, a day after her father died of the disease. This case, the third in Goma, is the first transmitted in the city, which sits on the border between the DRC and Rwanda. Following the news of the case, there were reports early today that Rwanda had closed the border with Goma. However, the Rwandan Minister of Health and State Minister of Foreign Affairs said the border was not closed. They spoke at a news conference a short time ago. The year-old Ebola outbreak has killed more than 1,800 people. The cases in Goma have raised fears it could spread in the city of more than 1 million people. While leading UN agencies are urging governments to adopt family-friendly policies to encourage mothers to breastfeed their babies at home and at work, the World Health Organization and UN Children's Fund says breastfed babies have the best chance of enjoying a healthy, productive life. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva as World Breastfeeding Week gets underway.
Health experts agree both mothers and babies reap tremendous benefits from breastfeeding. They say nursing mothers run lower risks of getting ovarian cancer, breast cancer, and type 2 diabetes. For babies, there are both short-term and long-term benefits. They say mother's milk supports healthy brain development in babies and boosts their immune systems so they can better fight off infections. A UN survey finds wealthier countries have the lowest breastfeeding rates in the world, with fewer than 25% babies being exclusively breastfed. This compares with Rwanda, where nearly 90% of babies are breastfed, and other countries such as Burundi and Sri Lanka, which have high rates of well over 80%. Technical officer in WHO's nutrition department, Lawrence Grummer-Strawn, tells VOA children in the richer countries would enjoy long-term benefits from breastfeeding.
Babies who are breastfed are actually less likely to become obese when they're older children. They have lower risks of SIDS, or sudden infant death syndrome. They have lower risk of leukemia. And in low-income countries, it reduces risks of respiratory infections and diarrhea that are some of the big killers of children.
WHO reports increasing breastfeeding could prevent 823,000 deaths in children under 5 every year and 20,000 annual deaths from breast cancer. Additionally, Grummer-Strawn says a World Bank analysis finds investing in increasing breastfeeding would produce huge returns.
They estimated for every dollar that is spent to promote, protect, and support breastfeeding, $35 would be saved in economic gains around the world. The overall estimate is that on an annual basis, we lose $302 billion in global productivity because of the lack of breastfeeding.
WHO and UNICEF are calling on governments to support breastfeeding by enacting paid maternity leave for a minimum of 18 weeks, as well as paid paternity leave to encourage shared caring of children on an equal basis. They say employers should support nursing mothers returning to work by providing them with a private, hygienic space for breastfeeding and expressing and storing milk. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Thank you, Lisa. Well, Iranian President Hassan Rouhani today called the move by the U.S. to sanction Iran's foreign minister, quote, childish. In a speech, Rouhani said the United States claims it wants to negotiate with Iran without any conditions and, quote, then they sanction the foreign minister, unquote. Yesterday's executive order accuses Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif of acting on behalf of his country's supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, who was recently added to the U.S. Treasury Department's specially designated nationals and blocked persons list. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin says the United States is sending a message to the Iranian government that its recent behavior is completely unacceptable. Tensions between the two countries have been rising in recent months as the U.S. has reimposed sanctions on Iran to push it to renegotiate an agreement limiting its nuclear program. Iran has responded by seizing ships in the Strait of Hormuz. Well, you've been listening to International Edition. You can find us at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our director, Nadia Taha, our engineer, Patrick Dea. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.